the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider on what will be a busy weekend for Pope Leo, including his 70th birthday on Sunday, September 14th. On that date, the Church marks the exaltation of the cross, and in the U.S., people celebrate Flag Day. Now, for the interview segment this weekend, tune in to part two of my special on the papal residence of Castel Gandolfo and its centuries-long history, where I look at the main palace and other buildings, the extensive land and magnificent gardens, and the papal farm that actually occupies most of the land. I also talk about the ruins of the immense property and villa that once belonged to the Roman Emperor Domitian and that is now part of the Vatican-owned land. As you will learn, there are actually two separate papal properties. The land with the papal apostolic palace that overlooks the main square of Castel Gandolfo, and a later purchase in history called Villa Barberini, which features the stunning formal gardens, the farm, and a new addition called Borgo Laudato Si, or Laudato Si Village. This land, by the way, is separate from, but adjacent to, the apostolic palace. The village is a 135-acre ecological and spiritual project on the grounds of Villa Barberini. It's dedicated to promoting integral ecology and the principles of Pope Francis's encyclical Laudato Si. By the way, before I go to the news, I will be leaving this weekend for some vacation time in the States, but I won't be totally off social media, so check in with me on occasion on Facebook and X. Some of you call it Twitter. Now first, the top news stories of the past week. Sunday, September 7th. There was great jubilation in a sun-splashed St. Peter's Square Sunday, where well over 80,000 faithful welcomed the Catholic Church's two new wonderful young saints, Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. So many extraordinary things about Sunday. A tech-savvy Pope Leo canonizes the first millennial saint, the very tech-savvy Carlo Acutis. Also extraordinary was the presence of St. Carlo's parents and his twin younger siblings, Francesca and Michele. Also present was Wanda Gavronska, St. Pier Giorgio's 100-year-old niece, the daughter of Luciana, Pier Giorgio's sister. Now, Leo XIV, at his first canonization, told the faithful in impromptu remarks before Mass, "Today is a day of great joy, a blessing from the Lord, and truly a gift of faith that we want to share." And by the way, after Holy Mass, if you can be patient for a bit, I hope to come and greet you in the square. In his homily, Leo said, "Sometimes we portray saints as great figures, forgetting that for them it all began when, while still young, they said yes to God and gave themselves to Him completely, keeping nothing for themselves." In this setting, today we look to St. Pier Giorgio Frassati and St. Carlo Acutis. A young man from the early 20th century and a teenager from our own day, both in love with Jesus and ready to give everything for Him. Pier Giorgio, a lover of mountain climbing and God's creation, bore witness to God with his joy of living and of being a Christian in prayer, friendship, and charity. Carlo grew up naturally integrating prayer, sport, study, and charity into his days as a child and young man, said the Pope, who then quoted him extensively. Leo concluded, "Saints Pier Giorgio Frassati and Carlo Acutis are an invitation to all of us, especially young people, not to squander our lives, but to direct them upwards and make them masterpieces. They encourage us with their words, 'Not I, but God,' as Carlo used to say. This is the simple but winning formula of their holiness." Monday, September 8th. Pope Leo returned to Castel Gandolfo Monday evening for a very brief stay of less than a day. A statement from the Holy See press office announced, "This evening, Pope Leo will travel to Palazzo Barberini in Castel Gandolfo, and he will continue his activities from there tomorrow during which period no audiences are scheduled. Tuesday, September 9th, Pope Leo XIV reaffirmed the Catholic Church's commitment to walk the path of peace with other religions in a message to the Conference on Interreligious Dialogue and Harmony, underway in Dhaka, Bangladesh. He expressed his support for interreligious dialogue and the event's theme, promoting a culture of harmony between brothers and sisters, and he wished the participants the gift of a peace that is, quote, unarmed and disarming, humble and persevering. He noted that the theme arises from the conviction that our human community is truly one, in origin and in destiny under God. Leo also noted that the human family shares both the opportunity and the responsibility to nurture a culture of harmony and peace. Also Tuesday, as he was leaving Castel Gandolfo to return to the Vatican, Pope Leo XIV briefly answered questions about Doha from journalists who were awaiting his departure outside the gates of the Villa Barberini property. "We don't know where things are headed," he said. "The whole situation is truly serious. We must pray a lot and keep working, searching, insisting on peace." Regarding the evacuation order in Gaza City and efforts to contact the parish priest there, the Pope said, "I have no news." Asked for his reaction to news of Israel's bombing in Doha, Qatar, Pope Leo XIV described it as very serious news, and he expressed his deep concern over the developments following the Israeli bombing, which it was said was targeting some Hamas leaders there. The attack hit several residential buildings in the capital. Pope Leo expressed his concern over the situation in the Middle East. Also September 9th, at the start of the General Chapter of the Carmelite Order, the Pope sent a letter to the Order encouraging members in their service and prayer and in all forms of their mission. Through their daily work of education, spiritual direction, and parish mission, Pope Leo offered his prayers that the bond of charity within the communities may serve as an example of the gift of unity, especially in those parts of society fractured by division and polarization. Wednesday, September 10th, at the weekly general audience in a rainy St. Peter's Square, Pope Leo continued his catechesis on the Jubilee theme of Christ our Hope, saying, "Today we contemplate Jesus' death on the cross. What can really strike us is that our Lord does not die in silence, but cries out in a loud voice. The cry of the crucified Christ is not weakness, nor a crisis of faith, but an act of enduring trust. In this way, Jesus reveals a life surrendered and totally given to the Father. This act of hope amid extreme trial touches our hearts. Jesus' cry from the cross reveals, quote, the final stage of a love that is given up to the very end. And it encourages everyone to avoid seeing crying as a weakness, but rather as an act of extreme prayer. Think of the centurion," said Leo, "who, moved by the cry of Jesus, makes his first profession of faith after Jesus' death when he said, 'Truly, this man was God's son.'" Learning from the centurion, may our cries of faith, united with the voice of Christ, be a sign of hope and trust in a heavenly Father who hears the cries of his children. Pope Leo also renewed his invitation for everyone at the audience to pray for peace in war-torn places, appealing for protection and care for children. Thursday, September 11th, bishops ordained to the episcopacy over the course of the past year attended a formation course in Rome this week, which concluded Thursday with an audience with Pope Leo XIV. Such a course is an annual event for new bishops. The Pope urged his guests to remember they have been chosen, called, and sent as servants of the faith. "I wish to recall something as simple as it is not to be taken for granted. The gift you've received is not for yourselves, but to serve the cause of the gospel. Service," he said, "is not an external trait or set of actions, but rather a call to inner freedom, poverty of spirit, and a readiness for service that is born of love, so as to embody Jesus' own choice, who became poor to make us rich." St. Augustine noted Pope Leo said that bishops who preside over others must know they are the servant of many. And he, St. Augustine, pointed to Jesus' admonition of his disciples, who had begun to seek greatness for themselves. I therefore ask you always, said the Pope, to keep watch and to walk in humility and prayer, so as to make yourself servants of the people to whom God sends you. Also Thursday, Pope Leo XIV sent a letter to the rector of Rome's Pontifical Athenaeum Regina Apostolorum and to the organizers and participants of the 12th Latin American Congress on Science and Religion, being held September 10th, 11th, and 12th. In his message, he invited everyone following the Congress to look for paths that enable humanity to rise above all things that can be measured in order to behold the measure beyond measure, quoting St. Augustine. That way, even without words, God's work will proclaim the glory of its Creator. By focusing on helping man ascend above all things, the Pope argued all mankind will be able to hear his message of hope, not only in the brilliance of life's clear days, but also in the dark nights of anguish and tribulation. Friday, September 12th. At the start of the third edition of the World Meeting on Human Fraternity, Pope Leo greeted the participants in the Vatican Sala Clementina. In a world flooded with conflict and division, he said their presence was even more important as they are united by a strong and courageous no to war and a resounding yes to peace and fraternity. Reflecting on the words of Pope Francis that war is never the answer, the Pope said their presence testifies to this message, which can unite different faiths and cultures. He described it as a quiet yet powerful force that helps us recognize each other as brothers and sisters despite all our differences. Once we begin to see those around us as our brothers and sisters, we are free from the pretense of believing that we are isolated individuals or from the logic of forming friendships only out of self-interest. Leo said fraternity is the most authentic name for closeness because it means rediscovering the face of the other. For those who believe, it is seeing the face of God in everyone, the poor, lonely, even the enemy. Those are the news stories, but now stay tuned for my special on Castel Gandolfo. Welcome to the Q&A. This week, answering a question that came via email, I explain what an equivalent canonization is. Very early in his pontificate, Pope Francis issued a decree called an equivalent canonization, declaring one of his favorite Jesuits, Blessed Peter Faber, a saint. In equivalent canonization, a procedure described by Pope Benedict XIV in the 18th century, the Pope waives the usual judicial process and declares that a blessed's liturgical cult is extended to the universal church. Benedict XVI canonized St. Hildegard of Bingen by equivalent canonization in 2012. And earlier, Pope Francis had done the same with St. Angela of Foligno. Equivalent canonization, though not frequent, is not rare in the Church, wrote Cardinal Angelo Amato, prefect of the Congregation for Causes of Saints, in an interview published in L'Osservatore Romano at the time of the Holy Father's decree. Cardinal Amato said three elements are necessary for an equivalent canonization: a long-time cult, the constant and common attestation of credible historians of the Blessed's virtues, and an uninterrupted reputation for wonders obtained through the Blessed's intercession. All three, he said, were present in St. Peter Faber's case.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
Hello, Father Mitch. How are you doing?
I'm fine as frog here, Miss Julia. What can we do for you?
I love that response. It is so Father Mitch. Oh, I love you so much. I love everyone there. You guys are absolutely amazing.
I truly had the feeling that I would rather lose the use of my right arm, and I'm right-handed, than not have access to EWTN. It's so vital.
Okay.
carry the faith wherever you go. Catch up with the latest news from Washington, D.C., the Vatican, and the world on all of our EWTN news platforms, including EWTN News Nightly, the National Catholic Register, and the world over. Download the EWTN app at EWTNapps.com today.
I have a word for singles who are getting a bit older and are dating. I've met many of you who are waiting for that experience of being swept off your feet and finding the one. Stop putting that kind of emotional pressure on yourself. One of the reasons young lovers are swept off their feet is because they're still young. They're figuring out who they are, where they fit in the world, and what to do with their lives. They just left mom and dad a few years ago. They get swept off their feet easily because they're not all that stable. As you get older and more established, you know yourself. You meet potential spouses, and love unfolds in a different sort of way. A more peaceful way, one that puts solid friendship first. And like it is with a seasoned married couple, the fire of love isn't always as impassioned as you grow older, but it's deeper and in many ways far more beautiful. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my Vatican Insider special on the summer papal residence of Castel Gandolfo, with a look at the buildings, land, working farm, gardens, etc. This week, you'll learn about the celebrated and very old crypto portico, and also a bit on the newly inaugurated part of Villa Barberini, known as Borgo Laudato Si, or Laudato Si Village. You'll also hear why Pope John Paul wanted to build a swimming pool on the property. So enjoy part two of my special. Pope John XXIII, who reigned 1958 to 1963, also enjoyed sojourns at Castel Gandolfo. He started two traditions here as pontiff, praying the Angelus with the faithful on Sundays in the inner courtyard, and celebrating Mass in the parish church of St. Thomas Villanova on the August 15th Feast of the Assumption. Paul VI inaugurated papal trips by helicopter from Castel Gandolfo. Continuous use of a helicopter for short papal trips began during the Holy Year of 1975, when Paul VI would return to Rome for the weekly general audience. He died here on August 6, 1978. Cardinal Karol Wojtyla, Krakow, Poland, spent several hours here on October 8, 1978. He returned 17 days later as Pope John Paul, having been elected on October 16th. He spent most of every summer here and often came for several days after an especially long and arduous foreign trip. Benedict XVI, as we saw, also enjoyed the beauty, peace, and subdued rhythm of summer life at Castel Gandolfo, and he came here every summer for a couple of months after his election to the papacy in April 2005. He lived here for 2 months after he resigned, and he left the Vatican on February 28, 2013. I earlier mentioned one part of the pontifical property that is called Villa Barberini. Here we find many buildings, including the home of the director of pontifical villas and apartments, used by the Cardinal Secretary of State and by the prefect of the papal household in the summer. The formal gardens, the 62-acre farm, and the remains of Emperor Domitian's palatial 14-square-kilometer home are all part of Villa Barberini. Emperor Domitian was emperor from 81 to 96. Dr. Saverio Petrillo, former director of the pontifical villas at Castel Gandolfo, began to serve the Holy See in June 1958 and was named director of the villas in 1986. He authored a book entitled The Popes at Castel Gandolfo, from which I took much of the information I am giving you here today. A number of years ago, Saverio was my guide during a half-day visit to the papal properties, an excellent, knowledgeable, and discreet guide to the papal property and residences on that day we first met. His own story was quite remarkable. Dr. Petrillo began his work in Castel Gandolfo at the age of 18, when he was asked to take the place of a Vatican employee who was ill. In the ensuing years, he familiarized himself not only with the physical property, the farm, gardens, and buildings, but with the multi-century history of the villas as well. His office, as well as other administrative offices, was located in one of the buildings of the Villa Barberini part of the pontifical property, and it offered splendid views of the Castelli Romani and, in the distance, Rome and the Mediterranean. I was privileged to interview him there and have those same views. Separate from Villa Barberini, but only a short distance away, are the Apostolic Palace and the other gardens. The palace, the building overlooking the lake, is where the popes used to reside in the summer, and where the faithful could join him in the courtyard on Sundays for the noon Angelus. At Castel Gandolfo, Dr. Petrillo told me on my first visit, the Holy Father has the same basic rooms he has in Rome, a study, private chapel, dining room, and library. The rooms, as is the entire palace complex, are on a smaller, more intimate and homey scale. Everything here, he said, is very intimate, warm, and family-like. Even the pace of life is slower, more suited to man. As I said earlier, Pope Francis never spent a night at Castel Gandolfo, although he did visit Benedict XVI a few times when he was there. But Francis transformed the Apostolic Palace into a museum in the fall of 2016, delighting some people, but perhaps disillusioning many more. The delightful rooms described by Dr. Petrillo in his book were now open to the public and would no longer be the private quarters of any pope present or future. Many are hoping that will change. On our tour of the farm, Saverio Petrillo pointed out it produces eggs, milk, and yogurt on a daily basis. These are brought early in the morning to the apostolic palaces in both Castel Gandolfo and Rome and are sold in the Vatican City supermarket under the name Ville Pontificie di Castel Gandolfo, Pontifical Villas of Castel Gandolfo. Olive oil is also produced, but in very small quantities. Once, Vatican City even had its own bakery. Petrillo told me some 60 people work year-round on the papal properties in Castel Gandolfo, including gardeners, tree trimmers, those who work at the farm, electricians, other maintenance people, etc. Some reside permanently in buildings on the property, and additional numbers of staff have been added since the Laudato Si village. The heliport, which is not far from the farm, was first used by Paul VI in 1963 when he visited the cathedral at Orvieto. Continuous use of a helicopter for short papal trips, as I said earlier, began during the Holy Year of 1975 when Pope Paul VI would return to Rome for the weekly general audiences. Pope John Paul II, a very athletic pope, asked that a swimming pool be installed at Castel Gandolfo to be used for health reasons. Although I never did see the 60-foot-long pool on my tour of the papal villa and gardens, Dr. Petrillo told the story that when the pope heard that some people objected to the cost of a pool, he humorously said, "A conclave would cost a lot more." This was John Paul's explanation about how effective physical exercise was in helping him bear the strains of a tiring pontificate. The beautifully maintained and manicured formal gardens of Villa Barberini have been used by popes through the centuries for long walks and moments of prayer. The flowers, bushes, and trees of many varieties and trimmed to perfection in geometrical shapes provide beauty, seclusion, and tranquility. Covering many acres, the stunning formal gardens also provide lovely vistas of the Roman countryside. There are statues, fountains, and a labyrinth of walkways and roads, one of which dates to Roman times and is paved exactly like the old Appian Way. One olive tree in the garden has a special story. Just an olive branch at the time, it was given by King Hussein of Jordan to Pope Paul VI during his trip to Jerusalem in 1964. The late king's son and heir, now King Abdullah, was able to visit the gardens and saw the fully grown tree. Now, ruins of Emperor Domitian's villa can be found everywhere, and occasionally one will see a niche with a statue from the villa. The Emperor Domitian, who ruled from 81 to 96, had built a 14 square kilometer villa on this site. Constructed on three levels, the top was for the servants, the middle for the imperial family and their guests, and the bottom was the crypto portico, which is in near perfect condition after nearly 2,000 years. The crypto portico, reached now by a staircase built into the gardens, was constructed to provide the emperor and his guests with a cool place to walk, talk, and sit to escape from the summer heat of Rome. Enormous in size, it resembles a huge tunnel with one end open and the other closed. The closed end has a raised stage-like level accessible by a staircase. Today there is a large cross there. The ceiling is curved, and on the western wall there are windows at the top level. They were once covered with alabaster to let in the late afternoon setting sunlight, but not the heat. Also at Villa Barberini is the Antiquarium, a museum that houses a small but very prized collection of artifacts from Domitian's villa. These were discovered over the past century. Only restricted numbers of scholars are allowed to visit the Antiquarium, which includes busts, statues, columns, portals, and tables made of marble, and various stones, but to mention a few objects. I sincerely hope that someday you can visit this beautiful lakeside town of Castel Gandolfo. And by the way, tours will be opening up soon to the property at Villa Barberini so you can see part of the farms and the immensely beautiful gardens. As you know, Villa Barberini now houses what is called the Laudato Si Borgo or Laudato Si Village. Have a wonderful weekend.
For more information on these stories or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.